Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
Good Tuesday morning. To use a stock market term or some terminology, hey. Chicago sports fans, the voice of Keyshawn Johnson, Chicago sports fans were not too bullish on the Bears. The latest example last night, less than 150 yards of total offense after saying they were going to overhaul the offense, and that's where we'll begin this morning. I'm Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, presented by Progressive Insurance. Jay not in the chair at the moment. He hopefully will join us a little bit later this morning. He's getting ready for the NBA draft tomorrow night on ESPN, but it's a pleasure to be joined by Chris Canty, the Super Bowl champion. He's got his own show with Rick DiPietro, the old Islander, and Dave Rothenberg on our New York affiliate. He'll be with us this morning till 8:30. Then he's got to zoom over and do his own show. And we should mention Chris and Key were once teammates in Dallas 2005, Chris's rookie year. Key was just about the end of his stellar career. And
I just said
your stellar career. What did you want me to say
there? It wasn't the end. Okay. It was just different chapter in my professional life.
Gotcha.
This is kind of like old times, Zubin.
You're reunited again.
Yeah, reunited, and it feels so good. The only difference is instead of arguing with Todd Haley, he's arguing with Jay Will, and I'm sure at some point you're going to scream at me about how we need to get the break rather than Mike Zimmer yelling at me about running to the ball. So a little bit different, but still kind of the same.
Yeah, he was just a young kid, you know, big, tall, kind of bow legs, kind of like, you know, big though, really like huge defensive end type D tackle. You know, he was big, man. That's for damn sure. And young and nice. Didn't say much. Quiet. Just watched, kind of observed. That's why he's talking about the back and forth with Todd Haley. For a rookie, he sees the back and forth. He like, damn, you get to talk to the coaches that way? But it wasn't, it's never like a real argument, so to speak. It's just more about arguing or having a conversation, very animated, Z, about what's going on and taking place at the time.
Well, Zoo, the only reason I was quiet is because vets like Keyshawn, along with Bill Parcells and Todd Bowles and Casey Rogers, they said rookies should be seen and not heard. So when you get that from those guys, are you going to say much in the locker room? Probably not.
But we don't want you to be quiet this morning.
Not at all. I got this microphone now. Nobody can stop me. I'm all good.
So let's talk about what's all good for the Minnesota Vikings. They have suddenly gone from 1-5 to showing signs of life. They've won 3 games in a row. They are now 4-5. The Bears moving in the opposite direction. They've lost 4 in a row. But let's focus on the positive. Minnesota yesterday, Kirk Cousins finally getting a win on Monday Night Football. And this is a completely different Minnesota
1-9.
1-9. It was his 10th career start on Monday night. Finally gets that first win. And I think finally, Key, Minnesota is starting to look like the team you said they would be at the beginning of the season when you predicted they'd be a division champion.
Well, I did. I thought that they would win the division based on the way that they finished last year and Coach Zim coming back and Kirk Cousins coming back and then moving on from Diggs with drafting Jefferson out of LSU, Dalvin Cook, just the whole thing. And I knew that the secondary would struggle because they would be young. And I thought, you know, at the beginning of the season, it's like, okay, they lost one. I get it. They lost two. Uh-oh. They lost three. You know, you start looking at it like, well, what the hell is wrong with them? Now, all of a sudden, I think Gary Kubiak has settled in as the offensive coordinator now. And Kevin Stefanski has gone to Cleveland. Gary Kubiak now steps upstairs, calling the plays and getting back into that groove as an offensive coordinator. Defensively, they've always been a good defense because Mike Zimmer knows how to call defenses. Then the young secondary has settled in to some degree now. And then when you look at them overall, they're still in the mix. You know, you look at the next 3 games that they have coming up, Cowboys to start with, they very well could wind up having this thing go down to the wire to week 15 or 16 before they're eliminated from the playoffs, Chris.
Yeah, Key, you mentioned the Cowboys coming up. They also got the Panthers and the Jags. All 3 of those games are at home. So the Minnesota Vikings have a chance to get healthy, and it seems like this team is headed in the right direction. A few weeks back when they traded Yannick Ngakoue, we thought that they were punting on the season, but Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer had other plans, and now – this team seems like they're getting it together. The only concern that I have is that offensive line is still an albatross. They got to get that fixed because the Chicago Bears front seven dominated that group last night. Dalvin Cook really didn't get going. He wasn't able to have the impact on that game. And then they put a little bit of pressure on Kirk Cousins, although Kirk was getting the ball out of his hands pretty quickly. But the offensive line is still going to be an issue that the Vikings got to get fixed.
Yeah, but everybody's not running up on the Chicago Bears defensive front, though, right? I mean, everybody doesn't have that defensive front. The Cowboys, the Panthers, the Jags, is that defensive front going to look like Chicago's? So when you start to look at it, yes, the offensive line at times struggled for them, and they didn't get Dalvin Cook going, but the defenses that they're getting ready, especially the Cowboys' defense, and then when you dive into the Panthers, a little bit better defensively, but you start to look at it, you say, well, okay, overall, in three phases of the game, the Cowboys aren't good, better than the Minnesota Vikings. The Jags aren't better than the Minnesota Vikings. Depending on whether or not Teddy Bridgewater is healthy when they play the Carolina Panthers, you never know what you might get out of that. So they certainly, the needle is ticking upward for sure for them, and it's good to see.
No doubt. It's also good to see, at least if you're a Vikings fan, as Key mentioned, Kirk Cousins getting off the schneid on Monday Night Football. I know those famous words, "you like that," came when he played for the Washington football team, but after last night, I think it's fair to say, "you like that" is back. Here's Kirk.
You know, for me, it's all about, you know, playing well and, you know, doing my part. I've learned, played long enough to know that there's not a lot you can control as a quarterback. There is, you know, the ball's in your hands, but there's so many things out of your control. And so you just do the best you can, play the best you can.
So let's flip it to the other side with Chicago. And by the way, to Chris's point, Dalvin Cook, not great last night, 96 yards, 30 carries. But just a reminder, the previous two games, 206 yards and 163 on the ground. So he's been holding his own for sure.
And a lot of the times when we look at things, and Chris knows this very well, as a defensive lineman or defensive player, you look at the total. First thing we run to is the box score. Oh, man, look at the yards. He had less than 100. How many attempts? How did that play into play action pass? Mm-hmm. What did it do to the linebackers in the defense alignment? Did it negate them from having a full pass rush? Did it slow them down? And so when you start to look at that, it was very effective in terms of having him on the field, even though yardage-wise, he didn't have an explosive game, but it helped the overall game plan. When you got a guy like Kirk Cousins throwing for close to 300 yards and two touchdowns and one little interception, I don't really necessarily put that on Kirk Cousins. So when I put that on Thielen's supposed to catch that ball. Mm-hmm. Instead, it bounces off his chest because he's trying to catch the ball with his chest opposed to his hands, and he knows better. And then all of a sudden, it goes the other way for an interception. So when you start to look at it, you go, okay, Kirk Cousins did a pretty good job, but you got to factor in Dalvin Cook's ability to be on the field to give the defense something to look at.
And Chris,
well, yeah, he's definitely a guy that you got to account for, right? Dalvin Cook is going to dictate front and coverage, but I think with the Minnesota Vikings last night, it had more to do with what Gary Kubiak was doing play calling wise and being able to scheme up plays and get the matchups that he was looking for, because they got Buster Screen on Adam Thielen a few times and they took advantage of him. The two touchdowns that Thielen caught were on Buster Screen. So I think when you start talking about what Kubiak was doing, I think that had more of an impact than the rush attempts from Dalvin Cook. Because I'm with you. Sometimes with the running game, it's not necessarily about the yards.
Yeah.
It's about the attempts, and you force the defense to have to account for that. Last night, I thought that game was more about the ineptitude of the Chicago Bears offense, not being able to get anything going, and allowing the Minnesota Vikings time to be able to figure out their offense.
In our last minute, fellas, the Bears offense, they made the offensive coordinator switch. Essentially, Matt Nagy was calling the plays the head coach. Instead, it's now
so
Bill Lazor. They have less than 150 yards of offense. Fellas, they had more yards They had more yards on special teams than on offense.
They had more points on special teams, too.
Bill waited all this time to call plays and get his opportunity and his chance. Womp, womp, womp.
The Bears are on the bye, and they certainly need it. Much more on the Bears' offensive struggles on Monday night with Jeff Dickerson, our Bears reporter, coming up in 20 minutes. He'll join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. But coming up next, Drew Brees hurt again, and it's way more serious than we thought sitting here 24 hours ago. So can Sean Payton rally with a backup again the way he did a year ago? That's next on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin on ESPN Radio and smart speakers everywhere.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Those are the two options, of course. Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston. We're back. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin were presented by Progressive Insurance. You kind of heard, and I don't think Max Kellerman is like a huge Drew Brees or Saints fan, but you kind of heard a little bit of a different octave in his voice there coming back from the commercial break, because he was kind of stunned by the gravity of what happened to Drew Brees, as were many. I don't think many people expected the injury to be as severe as it was, but our Ed Werder is essentially saying that Drew Brees has three fractured ribs on the left side of his body. They thought those were incurred in that big win over Tampa Bay on Sunday Night Football a little over a week ago. And then two on the right side of his body, those were suffered in the win against San Francisco on Sunday. So that's five rib injuries plus that.
Is that a slab?
Possibly. What's that?
Is that a slab or half a slab?
A slab, dry rubber.
Saucy.
Has a half a slab.
So we got five injured ribs, and the two on his right side suffered on Sunday might have also punctured Breeze's lung. So we've got rib injuries, a punctured lung. He's out for the moment. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Key is watching the play with Kentavious Street just laying down on Breeze late in the second quarter. Drew was somehow able to finish off the half. He said he didn't have the energy to do it, but he had to do it for his teammates. Here's Sean Payton essentially saying, with the two guys he's got left, Jameis and the guy that can be a little bit of a trickery quarterback, he's fine with both of them.
Look, both he and Taysom have a good feel of what we're trying to do. They pick things up. And, you know, I feel like it's a good room.
So that's simple, short, and sweet from Sean Payton. Last year, of course, you may remember, Drew Brees was hurt, Chris. They had to go to Teddy Bridgewater, who played well. He was 5-0. It's just everyone's individual opinion on what you think on Bridgewater versus Winston. But Jameis came in, played in the second half after Drew got knocked out, 6-for-10, 63 yards. Very manageable. The Saints are hosting the Atlanta Falcons this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the upcoming schedule for the Saints, the next four games, they got the Falcons twice, they've got the Broncos, and they've got the Eagles. So it's not necessarily murderer's row, but it's going to be up to Jameis Winston to take care of the football, and that's going to determine how much success this team is going to have, because it almost feels like this team has had a shift in identity. In past years, they've been known for their offense, but this year you're talking about them having a top 10 defense. And that's really been the catalyst for them being able to get things going. And if they're going to stay atop of the NFC South, that's what's going to have to carry in the rest of the way, because Drew Brees is going to miss a few weeks. Stefania Bell said this is going to be a couple of weeks injury, two, maybe even 3 weeks. So you got to have somebody to be able to hold down the fort. I think that person is Jameis Winston, because they want to keep Taysom Hill in his role. But it's going to be up to Jameis Winston not to turn the football over. To me, that's the biggest key for him.
Well, I think it Chris is on to something there. When you look at the defense, when they went off and they won the Super Bowl, they was one of the highest-rated defenses in the league in terms of turnover margin. They created a lot of turnovers. They created a lot of havoc. It wasn't a shutdown defense. But when you look at them and you look at Jameis Winston, one of the reasons that Sean Payton went and got Jameis is for this reason here. He knew he was going to lose out on Teddy Bridgewater, but he needed a guy just in case Drew Brees was to miss some time that could kind of just step in. And he could control the turnover deal. I know everybody points and they look at the turnovers and they go, 30 interceptions and however many fumbles. Jameis Winston, oh my God, what a disaster. Yeah, if you allow him to do that. If I'm having him drop back and throw the ball 40 times a game and 50 times a game, you're going to get turnovers for him, because that is what Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense allowed him to do. Sean Payton is not going to allow him to trick off their season by doing that. He's going to keep him right in that little box, much like he did with Teddy Bridgewater. They went 5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater. All Teddy did was hand the ball off, a couple throws here and there. They played defense. They got in the game, and they got out with a W. And as you look at that schedule, when you talk about the Atlanta Falcons of the world, seeing them twice, you start to say, okay, he can hold it down, the Philadelphia Eagles. Can he beat Carson Wentz? Absolutely. Carson Wentz will help New Orleans. He'll help them beat them. So when you start to look at that, you're like, okay, if Drew Brees is 2 to 3 weeks out, let's say it's 4, for instance. You got the Falcons, the Broncos, the Falcons again, then the Eagles before you see the Chiefs in week 15, which at that point, whether Drew Brees was playing or not, I probably would have taken the Chiefs in this one. But they certainly can. He certainly can hold it down for those 4 weeks.
Well, here's
sure.
the thing. I worry about whether or not that's something that Sean Payton can limit. Can you coach the turnovers out of Jameis?
Absolutely.
Winston? I mean, look, no, hold on, Key. Here's the thing. We've got a 5-year sample size on what Jameis Winston is. And it doesn't matter who the head coach or the offensive coordinator is, the guy gives the ball to the other team. So I know that you can do things from a play calling standpoint to try to mitigate some of that. But when it comes to Jameis Winston turning the football over, I'm not sure that even Sean Payton can keep him from doing that.
No, I think Sean can, because it's all about the plays that you dial up and you design. So if you've given him 4 and 5 reads and you want him to scan the field, that's when he gets into trouble. Mm-hmm. But if you're telling him, hey, it's Michael Thomas, it's Emmanuel Sanders, if they're not there, throw it in the stands. Mm-hmm. That's a different conversation opposed to I'm trying to teach you to go through your progressions on 4 and 5 reads. He's not that quarterback.
No.
He's a guy that you got to cut especially the field down
in half. Especially in a new system.
Yeah,
that's the other part about it,
too. You got to cut it down in half.
He's learning this on the fly. And I think the offense will be a little bit different than what we've seen with Drew Brees. You kind of have to throw out what you saw against the 49ers when Jameis came in last week, because they're not the same quarterback. They're not going to see the game the same way. But to Key's point, it's about Sean Payton making sure that Jameis Winston understands when the opportunities are there to be aggressive versus when to make sure that you take care of the football and let's just get out of this series with a punt.
Think about Teddy Bridgewater when he took over. Teddy Bridgewater's first throw was 25 yards.
Yeah.
Now, they were not allowing him to push the ball down the field. Everything was right in front of him where he could see it nice and clean and get it out. 3-step drops, not trying to have him do 7-step, not trying to have him do too many play actions, just nice and easy. And then Taysom Hill is still going to be in his role, like Canty said, where you're going to mix it up a little bit, where he's going to be able to come in and kind of keep the defense on their heels a little bit to get them to kind of say, okay, we don't really know exactly what this is. Is he going to run? Is he going to throw? But he won't get 20 snaps at quarterback. He'll still get his usual 4 to 5 snaps at quarterback. That's just what Sean likes to do with him.
But this is a huge opportunity for Jameis Winston. Like, he's fighting for his career now. He went to New Orleans to have an opportunity to learn under Sean Payton and watch Drew Brees up close to see if he can resurrect his career. But that's what's at stake for Jameis right now. This is an opportunity that nobody could foresee. And now that the Saints are in this position where they're going to be missing their quarterbacks for a few weeks for the second consecutive year, it's going to be up to Jameis Winston to try to hold the ship and stay afloat. And based on how he does, I think it's going to determine the trajectory of his career.
His career in New Orleans, I must say. Mm-hmm. He's not going anywhere else. He will be the New Orleans Saints quarterback, depending on what happens in these next several games as a starter, moving forward when Drew Brees retire. He will not be like Teddy Bridgewater going to another team.
Interesting.
Indeed. And to Chris's point, Drew Brees is 41. He signed a 2-year deal. He's essentially halfway through it when this year is done. And the other subject that isn't being discussed, but we'll talk about it as the season goes on, this puts the Bucs right back in the division race. Right now, New Orleans is 7-2, Tampa 7-3. New Orleans swept the season series, so they have the game in hand. But if it's a 4-week injury like he postulates, it could be a 4-week, could be 3 weeks. You maybe open the door. You sort of put it out there.
Postulate.
You put it out there. It is possible. You get an opportunity here for Brady to smell blood and say, hey, we might not have to make the wild card. If Jameis is in there for any extended period of time, we can get in there and win. And obviously doing it with Jameis's old coach.
I know we got to get out of here and get the break, but here's the great thing. Jameis doesn't have to see the Buccaneers, so he doesn't have to worry about that, right? He doesn't have to worry about playing against his old team.
You're right. Bruce, no risk it, no biscuit, as he used to say. Sean ain't going to risk it with Jameis. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. This morning, we're asking on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed, who deserves the most blame for Carson Wentz regressing? Key mentioned Wentz earlier this morning. Is it Wentz himself? Is it the coaching staff? Is it the front office for not giving him the proper weapons? Let us know. Be a part of the Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin Nation on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. ESPN Nation presented by Dr. Pepper. It's official. College football's back. So is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. Still to come, Matt Nagy, Andy Reid disciple, struggling on the hot seat. Is another Andy Reid disciple that you could never imagine being on the hot seat just a couple of years ago, is his scalding as well.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
And that was the big story near the end of the game. If you couldn't stay up last night to watch a 1913 Vikings, the final, that was courtesy of WBBM News Radio 780. Foles, according to Matt Nagy, head coach, had his leg and hip injured in the final moments. You already know Trubisky's got the shoulder injury, so if the Bears had enough problems, you can add another one to it. Let's go to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line to welcome in Jeff Dickerson, our Bears reporter. He joins us this morning. All right, Jeff, so they said the offense would change after the play-calling duties were passed over from head coach Matt Nagy to Bill Lazor, and they end up with 149 total yards, more yards on special teams than on offense. What's the reaction this morning?
Yeah, I think the offense did not change one bit. It might have actually, guys, regressed. I mean, 2 of 11 on third down for the Bears last night. They only contributed on offense 6 points. Cordero Patterson had the 104-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. So they couldn't convert on third down, couldn't convert on second down, only 10 first downs for the entire game, did not run the ball. Patterson led the team with 30 rushing yards because David Montgomery was out with a concussion. And Nick Foles, before the injury, passed for 106 yards. I mean, I think what people are seeing in Chicago is that it doesn't matter who's calling the plays. The Bears' offense is pretty much broken beyond repair. So the reaction is what you guys would imagine. I hope one day we're all talking when the Bears are not in crisis, but that day is not today, because at 5-5 and losing 4 straight and now they're on their bye week, you know, there's a real chance the Bears could go from first to worst here in a couple of weeks. They were 5-1. Now they're 5-5. The division is tightening with the Lions and Minnesota both at 4-5. So obviously the vibes in Chicago not so good this morning.
Jeff, yesterday, you know, I said that Matt Nagy, in order to keep his job, they would need to make the playoffs. What do you think? How hot is his seat right now this morning?
Keyshawn, he's 25-17, which I know doesn't sound great. But John Fox won 14 games in 3 years. I mean, that era took a couple of years off my life covering the Bears from 2015 to 2017. You know, they've made the playoffs once. They were 8-8 last year. It's not looking good. But another issue, Keyshawn, with the Bears is, you know, their general manager, Ryan Pace, has been in the job for 6 years, and his record's nowhere near as good as Matt Nagy's. But the Bears had to hire a search firm to hire Ryan Pace, who then hired John Fox 6 years ago. So, I mean, there's no real infrastructure in place for the Bears to easily blow out everyone after the season. So I know that it's not going well, for Matt Nagy right now, but if the record is 25-17, and after living through the John Fox and Mark Trestman eras, I'm not sure if the Bears are that prepared to make a big change. Plus, everything going on with COVID-19, we all know the season's been different for everybody. So, yes, I think his seat is hot, but whether or not it leads to him losing his job ultimately in the offseason, I'm not sure if the Bears are quite there just yet.
Well, the reason I bring that up, because I'm thinking, okay, so yes, he went to the playoffs in his first year. What did they win, 11 games, 10, 12 11
games? Right,
12 games. So that's basically half of the 25 that we're talking about, right? I mean, and then when you look at it, he was the person who went out and vouched for Nick Foles and then made the decision to get away from Trubisky at 3-0 to go back to Nick Foles, which, you know, some would argue at 3-0, why would you even make the change? Even though Trubisky's not available now, but what if he was available and he was still starting? Where would you be at?
Well, your point's valid. And don't forget this too, Keyshawn. You know, Matt Nagy is only the Bears head coach because of his offensive association with Andy Reid. He was brought here to call plays. I mean, he wasn't brought here to hand over play calling duties to someone like Bill Lazor, who called plays for the Bears last night. So if he's not calling plays, what is he exactly? That's a great question. The Trubisky thing, you know, it was very clear that Nagy was just done with Trubisky. And they benched him in week 3 against Atlanta. They came back. Foles led them to a victory. But now they're in a really tough spot. You know, they do have the bye week, and maybe Foles can recover from this leg or hip injury he suffered last night. Trubisky's shoulder's been messed up. He's been inactive the last couple of weeks. They had Tyler Bray come in and try to finish the game off last night. That's not ideal for anybody. Oh, there's a lot of things you can look at and say, boy, Matt Nagy has not made the right decision here. He could be in real jeopardy. I just feel like for the Bears themselves, with a GM and a head coach that are so closely tied together like Pace and Matt Nagy, and with no one in place in the organization to step in and say, okay, these guys are fired, I'm going to hire this guy who's going to hire that guy, it's always a little more complicated when it comes to Chicago and these types of matters.
Jeff, Nick Foles gets knocked out at the end of that game, has to be carted off, as you mentioned. When can we expect an update on his status? And where are we at with Mitch Trubisky? Is that a consideration if he's healthy coming out of the bye week, if Foles isn't ready to go?
Yeah, Chris, it's definitely a consideration. Matt Nagy was asked about that after the game last night. He thinks Trubisky probably could be ready for the Packers game on November 29th. He didn't want to make any bold proclamations of that early. We're still waiting to see what was going on exactly with Nick Foles. But I think Trubisky, of course, is back in play here. If Foles can't go, Matt Nagy will speak again to the media coming up in a couple of hours. So maybe there's a little more of an update on Nick Foles. He was in a lot of pain last night. We talked to some guys that are with him in the post-game locker room, and he was limping around. So, you know, the bye does come at a good time for him health-wise. But they got the Packers coming up in 2 weeks on a 4-game losing streak. So, yes, I think, barring a really quick recovery from Nick Foles, there is definitely a chance that Mitchell Trubisky's back in there when the Bears come off their bye.
One thing I got to mention, the thing I learned during this interview more than anything, is that the Bears actually paid somebody to find Ryan Pace for them. That has to be the worst possible scenario in Chicago. I'm just looking at the dude's resume, man. I'm just looking at his resume.
Search firms never work out. They never
work out. Here's $50,000. Give us five names.
Right? No, it's actually more than that. It never works out, though.
And it certainly isn't working out in Chicago. Jeff, thanks for the insight this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
I'll start my own search firm.
Is that right?
Yeah, Canty and Key. We're going to go find you a coach, an athletic director, in every sport, right?
Can you believe he didn't say Key and Canty?
No, I like that. He put me first. How about that? He must actually like having me on the show.
Y'all need to stop, man, because y'all setting this narrative amongst American people that I am something different than what I am.
No, you are genuine.
Shut up, Evan.
And authentic, that's for sure. Let's talk a little NBA, but first, before we do that on the Alphabet Soup, let's go from A to Z. And from A to Z is brought to you by Redbox. Redbox has new movies at the box and streaming on demand from the producers of Get Out and Us. Don't miss Antebellum, starring Janelle Monáe. Visit Redbox.com for all the ways to watch. If you're just waking up this morning, you might have missed this story. James Harden turning down an opportunity to be the NBA's first $50 million a year player. The Rockets wanted to offer an extension that would have put his salary right at $50 million. But Woj last night on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt says right now the operative letter is B. He'd rather go to Brooklyn than the bank.
James Harden has made it clear to Houston he turned down a $50 million a year extension. That was the max extension off of his current salary. 2 years, $103 million. Turned that down recently, I'm told, and made it clear, I want to go play with Kevin Durant. I want to go play with Kyrie. I want to play in Brooklyn. But right now, that is just a wish.
He's going to force his way there, Key.
Why not? I mean, yeah, look, that just goes to, that tells you something. I don't want to be here, man. I don't care how much money you give me. It's not what I want to do. It's not for me. I want to go to Brooklyn. End of the day, I'll worry about my money later on.
Indeed. And the Suns have a guy on the move as well. They pick up Chris Paul from the Thunder. So James Harden might be heading to Brooklyn. Chris Paul is definitely heading to the desert. Pair him with Devin Booker. He got a nice little 1-2. The Thunder in full rebuild mode. Hired a new head coach last week. They pick up Oubre, Ricky Rubio, Ty Jerome, first round pick. Sam Presti has been known to come up big with those first round picks. Just look at what he did with some of the guys in OKC that have flourished elsewhere. Oh, you know, like James Harden. Here's Ramona Shelburne essentially saying the combination of factors made this just too good for CP3.
They're a team on the rise, close to home. He sees kids all the time. His family can come see him. Like, it's a great, it'd be too high. I thought Philadelphia was in the mix for Chris Paul, not just because Daryl Morey knows him from their time in Houston together, but he would just be a great fit for them in Philly. They need a point guard, obviously, with that team. But it's just harder to get that done with what Philly has to offer.
And they do have a second-year head coach in Monty Williams. Mm-hmm. Draft tomorrow, free agency 2 days after that. Regular season begins December 22nd. And, Key, you said this is great for CP3.
It is a great move for CP3, although I don't like it. I would have rather see him go to, like, a Milwaukee out of the East. Easier opportunity for a great guy like this, a Hall of Fame guy, to get an opportunity to get into a championship situation. They're not in a championship situation in Phoenix. Let's be real. There's Golden State coming back. You still got Denver. You got Utah. There's Portland. There's the Clippers. There's the Lakers. I mean, like, it seems like to me it would have been easier. I know that Jrue Holiday is being acquired by the Milwaukee Bucks, but I wonder if Milwaukee kicked the tires at all with OKC about acquiring Chris Paul to put him with Giannis.
Well, that's definitely a conversation they should have. And ultimately for Chris Paul, if you can't get it with a championship contender, you want to get yourself in a comfortable situation. And going out there with Monty Williams, a coach he's got familiarity with because they were down in New Orleans together, and then being that guy that can unlock the potential of DeAndre Ayton because he's the guy that the Suns took ahead of Luka Doncic. So you need to have somebody that can be a playmaker for him and also somebody that can make Devin Booker's job a little bit easier. So I think that Chris Paul is a good fit. Clearly, the Suns aren't a championship contender, but they were one of the biggest surprises that we saw down in the bubble with their performance. So adding a Chris Paul to that equation, I think that has this Suns team pointed in the right direction.
No, it does. It gives them another 7 or 8 wins, right? Chris Paul's good for that. And so I just, for me personally, because I like Chris, I wanted to see him. I would have rather seen him with the Clippers. Just give him an opportunity. Instead, the Clippers have made poach our guy Rondo. So it just depends. Our guy, meaning the Lakers, just in case you're wondering, Chris.
Well, I'm a Lakers fan too.
Okay,
I'm
so
right there
he's with
you.
Us. Yeah, thank right you.
There's
I appreciate
a lot of our
that.
Us and we on this show when we're talking about the Lakers. That's for sure. One other thing to mention, Chris Paul, obviously an elder statesman in the NBA, but last year certainly turned back the clock. The Thunder were much better than anybody could have reasonably expected, and that's because of the play of Chris Paul. Now you serve as a mentorship role in Oklahoma City. You go to Phoenix, which is one of the youngest teams in the NBA, so he can have that sort of role off the court as well. You mentioned DeAndre Ayton. Look, Luka Doncic was the runaway best player in this draft to that particular point. But if you look at Ayton's numbers, he had a little bit of a slip off, a little bit of a suspension, but his numbers have actually been really good. He's been totally overshadowed by Doncic, but Ayton's done a really, really great job. One other thing I wanted to mention, trades were on a freeze since the deadline had passed. And obviously then we went to the bubble where Chris mentioned the Suns actually went undefeated. But a couple of days ago, the NBA lifted the restrictions on what they call trade concepts, right? Because the offseason is so truncated. You got the draft, then you got free agency 2 days later, and then you got 71 days of an offseason. So the NBA essentially said, listen, you can't tamper, you can't talk, and all that sort of stuff. This time we're going to raise that a little bit. We're going to make sure that gets lifted so teams can talk about concepts of trade. So when they said, look, it's time to do it, you can go for Chris Paul because you've already had the background chatter. It's an important distinction to make because the NBA obviously is dealing with an offseason like they've never had before.
Well, it's just like when free agency starts, right? It's like it's they don't sign until a certain date, but they have a week of conversations.
Right, the tampering
that they can,
period.
The tampering period. They can put in play and have that conversation about what the deals could potentially look like. And so, yeah, it's fine. I think it's a good idea.
20 seconds away from talking about the more juicy story, which is Harden. But first, Keyshawn, J. Will, Zubin, brought to you by Straight Talk. Look, we all accidentally damage our phones. It happens. Now, Straight Talk Wireless's new Platinum Unlimited plan includes phone protection, just $65 a month for unlimited talk, text, data, and more. See mobile protect terms and conditions at Asurion.com/Straight Talk. Limitations and exclusions apply. Is James Harden about to be your neighbor? Like, I mean, is this really going to happen? I mean, this is incredible. Harden's got leverage like he's never had before. The Rockets have a brand new GM and a head coach. If they don't think that he wants to be there, they can rebuild on their own merits, go in a completely different direction, unlike Daryl Morey, and then send Harden to a place he wants to go. Obviously, he is in search of that elusive first championship.
Yeah, and he should be. Here's another guy, much like a CP3. You want to see him go to a place that they have a real opportunity to win a championship or at least play in a championship again. And so it makes all the sense in the world. You know, it's weird on the surface of things, especially as athletes or people look at athletes and say, wow, he turned down 2 years, $103 million. That's
hard to compute.
It is. It's just like, how could you wrap your mind around it? But what's the most important thing? The most important thing is trying to get to a championship. I got all the money in the bank. I can't spend it all. Right? I mean, that's the way he looks at it. And he's young enough to get back to a third or even a fourth. I don't know if this is a third or a fourth contract extension at some point in time.
It's the only thing missing because he's one of the greatest scorers of his generation. He has shown he could fill it up. He can score in any which way. But that chip's the only thing.
If I made $350 million or whatever the numbers are, I'm just, you know, on and off the court if I'm James Harden. What's another $100 million? I'd pay $100 million to get to my championship ring. That's why these owners out here in professional sports spend so much money trying to have that conversation in the room when they go to West Palm Beach to their little meetings and boardrooms, and they want to be able to talk about, I got a ring. That's the thing that hurt a lot of owners when they're in these meetings. All their little buddies walking around, mm-hmm. Chris, and they could, hey, how you doing, so-and-so, and how you doing? Yeah, it was great to have that party the other night, and I can't have that conversation. That conversation is real. James Harden wants to have that conversation. He can't, when he's on those trips with his friends that have won championships, he got to sit quiet in the corner.
He can't be in that conversation. It's a whole different ball game. But when it comes to James Harden, I'm not necessarily sure that he's a fit in a lot of other places. So I wonder about the leverage that the Rockets would have when they try to move him if they do decide to go in that direction. If you're Houston, I mean, you've already started to kind of tear it down. I mean, you moved on from Mike D'Antoni. You parted ways with Daryl Morey, so it almost feels like you've started the process. Now it's just a matter of, okay, can we offload Russell Westbrook, P.J. Tucker, and then what can we bring back in return from James Harden in order to jumpstart this rebuild? Because if James Harden lets it be known that he doesn't want to be in Houston anymore, you have no choice as an organization.
What did I say yesterday? With professional athletes telling an organization, I don't want to deal with you. Those organizations will find a way to move you because they can't have that in the locker room. They can't have it. And it's not that James Harden's a bad guy.
Especially with a new coach.
It's not that he's a bad guy. It's just that I can't have a guy that doesn't want to be here not buying in 100% to what I'm trying to do. And it would be unfair to Silas to do that to him. So, yeah, you go ahead and you move him. You saw what happened in San Antonio. Kawhi didn't want to be in San Antonio. So they said, okay, we going to ship you off to Toronto. And how did that work out, right?
Yeah, seriously.
That's what happens.
Think about this. Silas, for those that aren't aware, Stephen Silas, 19-year NBA assistant, finally getting his first crack as an NBA head coach, the son of Paul Silas. You get that crack. You think you're going to have these two big superstars. You might not have either of them when the season starts December 22nd. So it's an interesting dichotomy from what he thought he was walking into to what he might have now.
But did he really think that, though? You know what I'm saying? Like, did he really think, when they sat down and they hired him, that he was going to have Westbrook and Harden? And I could ask Woj that when we get Woj on, but think about it. If I'm a coach that's taken over a job and I know that they failed at the system that was in place before, I'm going to run something close but not quite the same. Chances are these two dudes aren't going to deal with me. You know that. Like, you honestly know that. He's not oblivious to the situation when he took the job.
No doubt. But according to Jay Will, when he was talking about this, and Jay's going to join us a little bit later this morning, Silas. Yes, indeed. Jay was saying that Silas is really known for his communication and his rapport with big superstar players. He had been in Dallas. He had been in a lot of places that had star players. And even though he wasn't the head guy, now he's moved the 18 inches over to be the head guy.
Different.
He's had the relationships. You're right. It's 18 inches, but it's a world of difference. Let me ask you this. Rarely does anybody go to a team, Chris, for an assistant coach. But it is notable because you mentioned Mike D'Antoni is out of Houston. But oh, guess what? Mike D'Antoni's an assistant coach with the Brooklyn Nets. Obviously, he and Harden did have a very good relationship. So take me inside that. I mean, if you're a player that likes to fill it up and has the usage rate of Harden, you'd love to play for a guy like D'Antoni, who's an offensive specialist. Is there any way you think maybe that could be leaning him and saying, you know what, I'd love to play with Kevin Durant, be reunited with him, play with Kyrie, play with Steve Nash or for Steve Nash. But Mike D'Antoni, the guy that may have taken my career to the next level, is right there in Brooklyn.
See, I think it's less about James Harden's relationship with Mike D'Antoni and more about Harden's relationship with Kevin Durant and probably more importantly, Kyrie Irving. Because if James Harden comes to Brooklyn, James Harden is going to be the primary ball handler for the Brooklyn Nets, and Kyrie's going to have to be off the ball. Is Kyrie going to be willing to resign himself to that kind of role? I mean, is he going to be willing to do that similar to what he had to do in Cleveland when LeBron came back? That's the question I don't know. Is that personal relationship strong enough to make that dynamic work? I think that's the biggest question when it comes to whether or not the deal makes sense for the Brooklyn Nets.
I think the relationship is strong enough, I think, because you have Kevin Durant, you have Mike D'Antoni there, you have a veteran in Steve Nash, Jacques Vaughn is there as an assistant, and Kyrie can play off the ball, can play on the ball. It gives them options. It gives them options. Now, clearly, you got basically three dominant players in terms of offensive performance, all different in their own way, right? But that's lethal. I think that's lethal for the East. And if they grab James Harden, nothing less. I know prior to this I said that they, you know, showing up in the Eastern Conference Final would be good, but nothing less than getting to the championship? Like, nothing less.
Oh, yeah.
If they get James, bust.
Yeah, Key, if they get James Harden, the only team in the East that's going to stop the Nets from getting to the NBA Finals is the Nets.
Yeah, it's the Nets.
There's nobody else.
Well said, because then think about it. Just on the surface, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving.
And whatever else.
And anything else
they
can put together. And Key, well, you're going to be in a lot of the games. I know you live not too far from the Barclays Center. We should mention James Harden is an 8-time All-Star and the 2018 NBA MVP. Listen, he's got everything except that chip. His player resume is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Learn more at Indeed.com/credit. So once again, let's just go through what's going on in the NBA over the next couple days. The draft is tomorrow night on ESPN. Jay Will will be there. He'll be with us this morning to break it down. We'll see where the latest Ball brother ends up. LaMelo is in the mix there. 2 days later, free agency. The season on December 22nd, trade season, as you can already see, is open, and we'll see if the Nets and the Rockets swing a huge one. We'll keep you up to date. Still to come, Philly media and Philly coaches normally get at it, but wait till you see what happened yesterday with the Eagles.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.